Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Now, psychologists describe forgiveness as kind of a clear intent to let go of resentment in relation to an individual or a group that's caused grief, irrespective of whether forgiveness is deserved. How do you personally describe forgiveness? What does this concept mean to you?
I want to say that forgiveness only has a sense or a meaning when you're not able to do it.
Okay.
So when you're not able to move on, let go, move past resentment, all of those things that the psychologists, you know, describe as good things that you should do, I think that it really only has a sense for you when you're actually in the situation where it's impossible.
Wow. Okay. And that's when it is at its most
vivid, alive. That's when you're grappling with it in the most, meaningful way.
Absolutely. And is that grappling in that really hard and difficult and dark time, would you say that that's where connections between kind of compassion and justice are formed?
Well, I think you need to distinguish between justice on the one hand and forgiveness on the other.
Okay.
I think that they're different. I mean, they may be related, but they're different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes, unfortunately, forgiveness is confused with amnesty, like legal amnesty. People think, oh, if you forgive, it means, okay, you don't have to go to jail. You don't have to be brought before the law.
You don't have to answer to your actions.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that they're different.
Absolutely. I completely agree. It's not something that a lot of people will spend a lot of time considering, though. It's not something that a lot of people will spend, unless they're in the unfortunate situation where they're faced with having to forgive someone or wanting to bring someone to justice. I don't think it's something that a lot of people consider in their everyday lives.
I'm not sure if that's true.
Oh, we've got some conflicting views here. You would disagree?
Yes, because I noticed that forgiveness, or particularly the inability to forgive and the inability to apologize, plays a very, very big part in a lot of people's lives, particularly in intimate relationships.
Okay. All right. You know, now, you've just written...
Family, lovers, wives, husbands.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, now that I'm thinking about it more, I feel that, it is a huge part of life, a huge part of relationships.
Particularly in relationship to death and dying.
Okay. See, that's not something I've experienced, unfortunately, a lot in my life.
Yes, but you will.
Unfortunately, everyone will. You've released a book all about forgiveness. It's called The Forgiveness to Come, The Holocaust and the Hyper-Ethical. It's been published by Fordham. Tell us a little bit about this book. What does this tackle?
The book reads very closely the debate about apology and forgiveness among Holocaust survivors.
Okay.
So it's very interesting that within this community around the world, there has been an ongoing debate for the last 30, 40, 50 years about how forgiveness should be understood, if it's a good thing, if it's possible. And also there have been, and I think this is also something the book takes very seriously, a lot of demands to forgive that have been placed on these people. So Primo Levi, for example, one of the most famous writers about the Holocaust, he would go to schools and he would, you know, tell the children about what happened to him at Auschwitz. And the first question he was asked was, can you forgive? And he often, the question left him
baffled.
In a way baffled, or he could not respond, you know. And eventually, he formulated an answer to that question. But I think that what interests me is that moment when he's just not able to respond to this question, because what he went through and what the people he was with went through, those who died, it seems to be of another order to what can be matched by that language, or that the way we've inherited this concept of forgiveness, which is, of course, a monotheistic concept. So it implies that there's a God above who is guiding our actions, and that there is a meaning, and that all of these things that crimes against humanity in a way radically put into question.
Absolutely. Was it, when you were researching the book and when you were writing about it, you mentioned that the individual you were talking about had kind of formulated an answer regarding whether or not he could forgive.
Indeed.
Did you find that that was a sentiment echoed by a lot of Holocaust survivors?
No. And I think, what Levy said was that, I think he said that you, you can't forgive because, or that the forgiveness wasn't possible for him because only the people who died could forgive. That's a very common response from Holocaust survivors. You know, others say that they are against any kind of reconciliation with the perpetrators because once you go towards the reconciliation, then you in a way abandon the demand for justice and all of these things. But there is one woman who I read very closely in the book who does say that she forgives. Her name is Eva Moses Kaur. She was a survivor of the Mengele experiments at Auschwitz. And she says, and this is a very, I think, contemporary sentiment, I forgive to heal myself. You know, I was a victim of Mengele's experiments. My sister died as a consequence of his experiments. My family died, but I forgive because I want to move on and I want to, you know, get on with my life. She's a real estate agent in Terre Haute, Indiana.
Wow.
And what I try to argue in the book is that what she's calling forgiveness isn't forgiveness. It's a therapy of mourning in the name of forgiveness.
Okay.
That, in fact, it doesn't really have anything to do with the perpetrators.
No, absolutely.
It has to do with her healing herself, empowering herself, so she can be a normal individual
and
in the world.
She can move through
life. Yeah, she can, you know. And I'm not necessarily saying something against that.
No.
But I'm arguing that that shouldn't be called forgiveness.
No,
that
not
forgiveness
true forgiveness.
Is something else.
Yeah.
True forgiveness is something else.
Mm. Did you find it's obviously these are highly emotive stories and really horrific things that have happened. When you were writing this book, when you're putting it together over the 3 years that you did, how did you deal with the emotion and having to take that all on yourself? Did you find that a difficult task?
It did make me very angry. I mean, I wrote some of it in Berlin. And Berlin, you really feel the Holocaust very present.
Okay.
Because virtually everywhere you look, there's one of these stones that remind you of a deportation. Someone was in a house and they were deported. And I remember I used to go for walks in cemeteries.
Wow.
While I was writing the book. But at the same time, I want to emphasize that I belong to maybe the second or third generation after this event happened. And I think that the response of my generation is different to the response of the generations before me, for whom the pain was much, much more intense. For whom, you know, you couldn't write a book about forgiveness making this kind of argument, you know, for the generation of those people who experienced it. I do read closely the work of one philosopher who belongs to that first generation. His name is Vladimir Jankelevich. And he's so interesting because he wrote a book about forgiveness. And just after the war, he did acknowledge the possibility that there could be a forgiveness. But then 20 years later, he said forgiveness died forever in the death camps.
Wow.
So he actually, what I like about him so much is he was contradictory.
Yeah.
He didn't have like a coherent position on this.
No.
And that through this kind of, if you like, emotional journey and also intellectual journey, he bore witness in a way to some of the problems and debates and difficulties that gives before us. I mean, I also want to say we don't have a choice not to engage with this. I mean, I do very strongly believe that the language of apology and forgiveness as it's currently used is toxic, dangerous.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's considered to be very good, but it's hopelessly insufficient and at times dangerous and destructive. But at the same time, I think we have to nonetheless rethink this legacy and ask ourselves, how can forgiveness be thought in a more, let's say, in a way that is deeper and more ethical and more even hyper-ethical.
Okay. Oh, we're tying into the title here as well. Yeah, wow. It's definitely something that going forward will be a struggle for humanity, I think, for ever and ever and ever, the concept of forgiveness, grappling individually with forgiveness as well.
Yes.
I think it'll be that eternal struggle that we all kind of make our way through. Now, the book launches the next Friday, am I right?
That's correct.
Where are we
this
launching?
Friday.
This Friday.
This Friday, gosh, just up time. The road in Glee Books.
Fantastic. We'll pop some details on the podcast at the end of the show. Peter, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there, but thank you so, so much for joining us this
morning.
Thank
you for having me.
That was Dr. Peter. Oh, helps if I turn Peter's microphone down, not my own. That was Dr. Peter Banky there talking about his new book, The Forgiveness to Come, The Holocaust and the Hyper-Ethical. It's been published by Fordham. We'll pop all the details on the podcast at the end of the show, 2scr.com/weekendbrekkie, if you'd like to go along to the launch or get yourself a copy of the book. Going to jump into a track now from Bughouse. It is called Tax Stamp. Good morning. Oh, yes, sir. Steep and great and like a safety ramp. Well, you can claim back with a tax stamp.